Two, okay? This time, Emmy, it's not, I'm sorry, I have to apologize. It's still a rubbish thing. But it's like, it's yellow, so it's kind of like a desert, or at least it looked yellow on my computer screen. It's not the closest I could get, okay? Now, if we think of last week's message as Egypt, right? We said that Egypt represents the system of the world, and God just called us out of Egypt, right? That represents our salvation, if you like, okay? Then this week, the desert would be our present. If last week was our past, Egypt was our past, this would be our present, okay? So now we're talking about what happens right after we've been called out of Egypt, out of the world to salvation, okay? I want you in this coming however few minutes, okay? Put yourself in the position of the Israelites who have just come out of Egypt, okay? Don't just read it as words on a page or listen to the story coming from me. Put yourself as one of the people who had been a slave all your life, let's say however long you've been alive, you've been born into a family of slavery, okay? You've had a horrible time and that's all you know. And suddenly, you've just come out through this incredibly miraculous process, right? You've come out of Egypt and you're just, how do you feel at this point in time, okay? You can't believe it. You're like in a daze. Like, we were slaves and now all of a sudden we're free and all of us, look, there are so many of us, it's like more than 1.3 million of us coming out of Egypt at the same time, and God has done it in an amazing way. Wow, right? We're on a crazy high. And that's exactly what it's like right after we get saved. As a young believer, as a fresh person who's just come to Christ, if you remember what that felt like, that, oh my goodness, I'm finally free, I finally have that peace, that joy, the thing that I've been looking for so long. Oh, it's finally here. You get that feeling and you know what it's like, right? But as soon as they come out of Egypt, they've been walking for maybe just over a day, okay? And then this happens, okay? So we want to read this together. Again, I didn't think it would be this small, but just listen to me as I read it, okay? Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Forget all these places for now, okay? Pharaoh will think, so this is God speaking, Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this, okay? So there's God's plan, okay? God had a plan, and he wanted to execute it, okay? When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We've let the Israelites go and have lost their services, because they were their slaves. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of his best chariots, along with all other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly, okay? Again, remember what it was like when you were saved. You felt like, at that moment, nothing could shake you, and you were on top of everything, of the world, and you just, everything was perfect, okay? So they were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they encamped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. And they were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. And Moses answered the people, do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance that the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you will see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Okay? Couple of key lessons to take away from just this portion, okay? Imagining that you have just, you're in the Israelite shoes, okay? You've just come out of Egypt. You're going crazy because you can't believe what's just happened. Remember, there were the 10 plagues over Egypt and all this other crazy stuff that happened, okay? and you've just come out and you're super excited. And suddenly you look back and you see the thing that you fear most pursuing you. Okay? That's the setting right now. Okay? Daniel, next slide, please. I don't think I put any effects into this one, just to keep it plain and simple. Okay. God's plan. Okay? God had a plan. He actually said to Moses, I want you to camp in this, again, just bear with me. Please bear with me, okay? I want you to camp in this specific spot because if Pharaoh sees you here, he'll think that you're trapped and that he's got you. And that's how I'm going to get him, okay? It's a plan, it's a strategic tactic by God saying, be at this place at this time in this way so that you can see my hand deliver you from your enemy, okay? Perfect plan. Makes perfect sense. And he actually says it to Moses, right? He actually says it expressly to Moses. He doesn't hide it, he says it, right? But they react by going crazy. They react by saying, why have you done this to us? You've brought us out here to kill us. Even though God is like, no, just relax, okay? I have a plan. Yes, the enemy is scary, but don't worry. I'm bringing them here so that I can destroy them and rid you of them once and for all, forever. But they go crazy. What you have to realize all the time, Deuteronomy 31:6, is God is always saying this to you. There is no point in time as a believer where God is not saying these words to you, okay? So let them sink in. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. Whatever them happens to be, okay? For the Lord your God goes with you, and he will never leave you nor forsake you. And in the New Testament, or actually still in the Old Testament, he says, for I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. If you knew that as an Israelite, you'd know that the fact that the Egyptians are behind you shouldn't bother you. And the fact that you're in this place right now and you seem to be trapped, that doesn't matter. Because God, if he's the one who put you there, and he said, this is my plan, this is what I'm doing, then he's doing it for a reason. And that reason is good. The end of that reason is to give you a hope and a future. Not to kill you in the desert like they thought, okay? Romans 8:28 in the New Testament says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Next one, please. Okay, that's the same slide as the one before. Don't worry, we're not going to read all of that again, okay? Don't be scared. Actually, what's the next slide, Daniel? Just so I know. Okay, yeah, back one. Okay. Forward. We can skip it. We've just read it and we've talked about it, okay? Egypt represents our past, like we said, okay? As a new believer, as a young believer, okay? Young in biblical terms doesn't mean in age. Young means that you've just come to know Christ, that you've been walking with him just for a little while. Your past, you think as soon as you've come to know Christ, all your problems are over. That's what they thought when they were coming out of Egypt. They're like, yes, finally, it's done. We're never going to be bothered by anything or anyone again. We're going to the promised land. Hooray. Awesome. Okay? That's not what happened. As soon as they came out, they realized that Egypt, their past, was pursuing them. And wasn't going to let them go without a fight. Like this kid. This kid right here. He's tenacious. So, back to what we were saying. Your past won't let you go without a fight. You start to walk with God and you feel on top of the world. You feel so much power and joy and strength and peace. And suddenly that sin that used to get you before you knew Jesus or before you felt close to him, you've fallen into it again. And you're like, wait, what? No, this isn't supposed to happen anymore. I'm not supposed to fall into this thing anymore. I'm supposed to be rid of it. Now I'm with Jesus. I'm out of Egypt. I'm free. It's done. Why is this still happening to me? Why is my past still running after me? 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come, the old has gone, and the new is here. If you've been born again, if you're walking with Christ, what's happened is your old nature hasn't gone anywhere. But the thing is, you've gotten a new nature that wasn't there before. A nature that has the ability to obey God. A nature that has the ability to please God that you didn't have before. And so as a believer, you now have a choice. Before you were a believer, you were just bound by that sin. But with the power of Christ, with that new nature that you have within you, you now have a choice to either live for the Spirit or to live for the flesh. Paul puts it like this. This dilemma that we have as Christians when we fall into things that we shouldn't, right? He says, I don't understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, that I do. Does that sound familiar? The thing, I want to be good. I want to do the right thing, right? But the thing that I want to do, I don't end up doing. And the thing that I hate, that's what I do. And if I do what I don't want to do, I agree with the law that it's good. In other words, if I do the wrong thing, I agree with God that it's wrong. I know that it's wrong. For I know that good itself does not dwell in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. How many of us have experienced that? I know what the right thing is, and I want to do it so bad, but I don't have the strength. I don't know where to get it from in order to actually behave the way that I'm supposed to. But I don't have the strength to carry it out. For I do not do the good that I want to do, but the evil that I don't want to do, this I keep on doing. Does it sound familiar to anyone? Now, if I do what I don't want to do, it's no longer I who do it. Here's Paul's solution. But it's sin living in me that does it. It's my sinful nature. The new nature that I have, the one that God actually looks at, how God sees me, is not in this way. That's the sinful nature that you're thinking of and that you're practicing. But what God sees is what He's put in you, which is His Spirit and His nature. And that is an incorruptible thing. In Galatians 2:20, Paul says, my old self has been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. In other words, when I think of myself, all that rubbish that I've done and that I will do, me, all of me, my sinful self, He died when Jesus died on the cross. At the exact same time, He's gone. In God's eyes, and it should be in mine too. That's what Paul is saying. That's how he lives. He doesn't live for himself anymore, and he doesn't live by his own strength anymore. He lives as a new creation in Christ. Okay. Next one, please. Now, we'll go back two slides, please, to the part where the Israelites were talking. Okay. This is something we do as new, old, all kinds of believers, okay? This is something that we do. Verse 10, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, listen to the language, after everything they've seen from God, after the 10 crazy plagues, and by the way, they were led out of Egypt by a giant pillar of cloud, and at night it was a pillar of fire. So there was like, nobody was wondering like, is God here or is He not here, or like, can I hear His voice or can I not hear? Like, God was very obviously standing in front of them. He wasn't hiding Himself in any way, shape, or form, okay? And they say this, was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Do you remember what we were talking about last week? Do you remember how oppressed they were? Do you remember how tortured their life was? From the moment they woke up to the moment they slept, which wasn't for very long, the whip was on their back. And they had no freedom. Their children were being murdered to suppress their growth. It was a horrible situation. Nobody would want to go back to slavery. But they've forgotten all that. They've forgotten it completely. You see, because as a Christian, you're walking and you're doing it God's way, and then you realize, hey, this is hard. Hey, this isn't like what I thought it would be. Hey, this isn't fun. Hey, I'm not running away from the enemy as fast as I thought I would be. And then all of a sudden, Satan whispers in your ear and he says, you remember Egypt? There was meat there. There was wine there. Beautiful buildings. There was a set system. You knew when you were waking up and when you were going to sleep and exactly what you were doing. You were safe. Yes, it was a little bit hard, but it's better than this. Better than being pursued by the army and killed in the desert. It's better than that, surely. Go back to Egypt. Egypt is great. You love it there. You're just misrepresenting it in your mind. It wasn't that bad. We begin to romanticize our past away from God. We begin to think, hey, maybe it wasn't that bad being as far away from God as we thought. But if you remember that moment that you became a Christian, that you accepted Jesus, if you remember the joy and the peace of that moment, then you will know that nothing, nothing is worth going back to that place for. But when it gets hard, as soon as it gets hard, we think, oh, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe Egypt was better off. Maybe I was better off back there. You forget that even though they have the food and the drink and all the luxuries in the world, you were a slave there. And even though all of those things might exist in Egypt, Egypt is under destruction. It's only a matter of time before Egypt gets destroyed. And if you're in it, then you'll be destroyed with it. And that's something that we have to pay attention to. Paul says this to the Galatians in the New Testament. He says, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? Before your very eyes, Jesus was clearly portrayed as crucified. In other words, you saw him. You met him. You knew what he was like, and you know what he did for you. It wasn't hidden. I would like to learn just one thing from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by believing what you heard? Are you so foolish after beginning by means of the Spirit? Are you now trying to finish by means of the flesh? Have you experienced so much in vain if it truly was in vain? So I ask again, does God give you His Spirit and work miracles among you by the works of the law or by your believing what you heard? Who brought you out of Egypt? Did you bring yourself out of Egypt by your own strength? Did you negotiate a deal with Pharaoh and he let you go? No, they tried that for 430 years. It didn't work. God miraculously stepped in and by his power brought them out. And yet, for some reason, when they got to this point, they're like, well, we have to win this fight. It's on us. It has to be in our strength to win this fight. Paul's like, what's the matter with you? You couldn't win anything. You couldn't do anything. You're powerless and helpless in every way. Who are you to think that after God brought you out by His power, you can continue in your own strength? The fragile and forgetful heart that we have when we encounter some trouble. Think about that for a second, okay? Let that sink in. Psalm 100, man, I wish these things were bigger. Anyway, Psalm 106 is something, we won't read the whole thing, this is just a little bit of it. It's like a 48 verse psalm, okay? Something I encourage all of you guys to go home and read, because this psalm is a summary of Israel's time in Egypt, okay? It just says, and they did this, and then God replied by doing this, and they did this, and then God replied by doing this, okay? So if you want a nutshell of what happened in the wilderness, read Psalm 106, okay? But I want to read you a little part of it, okay? We have sinned even as our ancestors did. We have done wrongly and acted wickedly. When our ancestors were in Egypt, they gave no thought to your miracles. They did not remember your many kindnesses, and they rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea. Yet he saved them for his name's sake to make his mighty power known. He rebuked the Red Sea and it dried up. He led them through the depths as through a desert. He saved them from the hand of the foe. From the hand of the enemy he redeemed them. The waters covered their adversaries and not one of them survived. Then they believed his promises and sang his praises. But listen to this. But they soon forgot what he had done and did not wait for his plan to unfold. I read this today, just before I came, and I couldn't believe the words I was reading. But they soon forgot what he had done and did not wait for his plan to unfold. Sound familiar? In the desert, they gave in to their craving. In the wilderness, they put God to the test. The Red Sea, by the way, happened just a couple of days after they came out of Egypt. And look, it says they complained at the Red Sea, and they complained right after it and right before it, and they forgot as soon as God had done something for them, they forgot instantly. My parents, when I was a kid, I would like, whenever something went wrong, I would be like, oh, you're, like, okay, if mom cooked something that I didn't like, I'd be like, you always cook this. And she's like, I cooked it like once this year. Why do you think that I always do this? We're like that sometimes. When we see something go bad, we think of everything as having gone bad. And that's not the case. We forget everything else that's been done that's good. And that's what happened here with the Israelites. Next one. They had daily needs, okay? They were over 1.3, again, put yourself in their position. You're a massive company, okay? You're over 1.3 million people, okay? You all need to eat and you're in the middle of a desert. Pretty crazy, right? But again, you're not the one who put yourself there. You're not the one who brought yourself out to the desert. God did, right? So it's on Him to provide, correct? But that's not how they acted. They just complained against him and they're like, actually, let's just read it. The Israelites said to them, so to Moses and Aaron, okay? This is right after all the stuff happened with the Red Sea, okay? Right after the going crazy and celebrating. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Listen to that, like, listen to the way they think. Isn't that insane? We used to think, like, I used to think, especially as a kid, if I saw God, like, if only I could see Him, like, if only He appeared to me just once, just so I could have a conversation with Him, ask Him a couple of questions, make sure of a couple of things, and then I would believe and I promise I would never doubt again. These guys saw God on a daily basis do insane things. Bring fire down from heaven and part the Red Sea and do all this insane stuff on literally a daily basis. Okay? They saw the result. They saw God right there in front of them. And this is how they reacted. So if you thought at some point in your life, like me, if only God would appear to me, I would never behave this way again. Guess what? You will. The disciples did too. Right after Jesus fed 5,000 people, He went into the boat and He said, be careful of the leaven of the Pharisees. You know what they say? It's because we didn't bring any bread. They didn't trust that the person who brought bread out of thin air for 5,000 people could do the same thing in a boat for 12. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. But anyway. Then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. So Moses and Aaron said to the Israelites, in the evening, you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning, you will see the glory of the Lord because He has heard your grumbling against Him. In another part of the Bible, it says this, He humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Your clothes did not wear out and your feet did not swell during these 40 years. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, so the Lord God disciplines you. Our time in the desert, in the wilderness, is often God shaping us into something so much better. If we would let Him. He's the one, he wouldn't bring you out to the desert if He knew that He couldn't feed you. Does that make sense? Does that sound like God? No. He's going to do it in His time and in His way, but it says to humble you. and to teach you something, that you can't live on your own strength, that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. And there's another miracle here. Your clothes did not wear out, and your feet did not swell. In 40 years they wandered, and their clothes were the same as the day they left Egypt. God provides. If God calls you out into the desert, He will provide for you even there. And that's something that you need to know, okay? Right after that, we're almost done, I'm not going to be too much longer, okay? That's what I'm saying, put your head, put yourself in the Israelites' position, okay? You're going through this journey together, okay? Right after God has just given you food from heaven, literally, it's just rained down bread, okay, in the desert, in the middle of the desert. Nothing makes sense. Moses, God called him and is like, hey, come up to the mountain. I want to speak to you there concerning the people, okay? And that's where the 12 commandments were given. 10, 12 commandments. Heresy. The 10 commandments were given. They're only 10, they're not 12. Okay, so he went up and he was away for 40 days? 40 days. He was only for 40 days, okay? The number 40 comes up a lot, and it's equated with trial in the Bible, okay? If you're studying the Bible and you're interested in that kind of thing, you should know that, okay? 40 equals trial. But anyway, after he'd been gone for 40 days, they're like, where is he? He's gone. He was old, so he's probably dead. We don't know what's happened to him. So here's what we're going to do. At Horeb, they made a calf and worshipped an idol cast from metal. They exchanged their glorious God for an image of a bull which eats grass. They forgot the God who saved them, who had done great things in Egypt, miracles in the land of Ham, and awesome deeds by the Red Sea. So he said he would destroy them, had not Moses, his chosen one, stood in the breach before him to keep his wrath from destroying him. Think about this for a second. What more does God have to do to get your attention? Part the sea? Bring down fire or food from heaven? Turn the water to blood? What else does he have to do to get your attention? And right after Moses leaves, just 40 days. It's just over a month, guys. 40 days is just over a month. They're like, hey, we don't know where God's gone, and we don't know where Moses is gone, so to replace them both, we're going to make this bull, right, and we're going to worship it instead. It's going to be made of gold, it's going to look awesome, and that's, we're going to say that that's the thing that brought us out of Egypt, and we're going to worship that thing for the rest of our lives. 40 days after coming out of Egypt, 40 days after Moses went up to the mountain. When I read this the first time, I'm like, what is wrong with these people? And I used to think the same thing about the disciples. I'm like, how can you be so dumb? Why are you doing this? And God whispered in my ear, don't you see yourself in them? How many times has God delivered me out of a billion situations? I would pray and He would answer and I'd be like, go around like, yeah, God is awesome, God is faithful, God did this and did that, and you won't believe what happened. And the next day, I'm back to my old, sinful, doubting self that completely ignores God as if He didn't exist. Sometimes it's not even a day after. Sometimes it's an hour after, or half an hour after, let alone 40 days. If you think you're beyond this, you're mistaken. This is shocking. But this is how we behave towards God. Every day. We forgot who it was who brought us out of Egypt and by what strength and power and incredible miracles that God has done in each of our lives. If you're sitting here, that's a miracle in and of itself, the fact that you're still breathing. But we completely forget that. And we forget God along with it. And we worship our own desires instead. Next one, please, Anna. Okay. Let me explain this to you, okay? Because, what's the next slide actually, so I can just be sure of where I'm going. Okay, go back. Okay. This, okay, is a map of where the Israelites left from Egypt and where they were going, okay? Now listen to this because it's pretty mind-blowing stuff. I will approach the bench. Okay. Here is where they started. Alright, just bear with me for a second. There is where they started, okay? That black route is the way that God told them to go, okay? From here to the edge of the promised land, okay, which is where they were going, guess how long that journey was? Hands up. Somebody give me a guess. Throw out a wild number. Guess how long that journey was? Now remember, it took them 40 years, but just guess how long that journey was. I want to hear someone guess.
11 days.
Whoever's studying his Bible there, Brother John. 11 days. 11 days. Right? Instead, this blue route, there's another explanation behind it, but that's not important right now. They took the red route instead for 40 years. A journey that should have taken 11 days. It took 40 years. You're an Israelite, remember? Put yourself in their position. This is insane. You know, by the way, God said, look at the bottom, like they know that it's supposed to take 11 days. They actually know that. It is only 11 days' journey from Horeb by the Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea, which is the edge of Canaan, the promised land. 11 days! Took 40 years. Why did it take 40 years? Daniel, if you could please go to the next slide. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation, the children of Israel, in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back words to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Okay, here's what happened. They got to the border, okay, after 11 days. They made that journey, by the way. They got there in 11 days, okay? They got to the edge. They actually made it in 11 days. And once they saw the promised land, they're like, ooh, this is nice, but we're not sure if we can go in. So we're going to send in some spies. They sent in 12 guys, okay? Here's what the report of the 12 guys was, okay? So we went into the land, they said, where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. And they showed them like giant fruit, okay? Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea among the people. In other words, there are too many, they're too strong. Yes, the land is great, but there's no way that we can take it. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are all able to overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out. In other words, they came back and they said this privately to Moses and Aaron. They said, "Hey, it's great, it's exactly what God said it was, but we're scared because there are too many people and they're too strong for us, okay? We can't do it." So when they went out to the congregation, to everybody else, what they said to them, they lied. They said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we, and they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. It's an evil place. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of giant stature.' There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight." Next slide, please. I'm just going to keep reading. "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only, listen to this, if only we had died in the land of Egypt.'" Do you hear this rubbish? It just keeps repeating itself. "I miss Egypt, I miss Egypt, I miss Egypt." Over and over and over again, every time they run into the slightest bit of trouble. Why am I going through this journey with God? So hard, so many obstacles, I feel like I'm going to die every 2 seconds. This isn't worth it. Egypt was better. "Or if we had died in this wilderness," now the wilderness is starting to look friendly to them as well. "Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us elect a leader and return to Egypt." They made up their minds. That's it. We're going back, guys. Let's pick a leader. Don't worry about Moses. We're going back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is exceedingly good land. It's a good place. If the Lord delights in us, then he'll bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. That was their reaction. So only 2 out of 10 said, "Hey guys, God gave us an awesome place. His promise is great. Let's go and get it." And the Israelites' reaction was, "Let's kill them. They're traitors. They want us to get killed." And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them?" If you were God, would you blame him? I don't. "According to the number of days," this is the judgment he passed down, "according to the number of days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, for each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. The Lord has spoken this. I will surely do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me, in this wilderness they shall be consumed, and they shall die." God had enough at this point. And said, "Since you spied out the land for 40 days, you had a chance to look at my promise for 40 days, and you chose to reject it, I will reject you from the land." We're going to sum up now. Oh, this one has some animation. Great. Lesson number one, always good. God always has a plan. Remember the Egyptians, the Israelites who were in a corner that seemed there was no way out. God always has a plan, and you have to remember that even if it's not revealed to you, it is always good, and it is always to lead to your good. Even if it doesn't make sense to you, there's an army in front of us with swords and spears and chariots here to kill us. How will you deliver us? But for God, it's not a problem. The sea behind you is not a barrier. It's actually an escape hatch, which you don't realize. Your past will fight you, but with Christ, the battle has already been won. You're going to have these bouts with your conscience. You're going to have these bouts with sin every now and again. But you need to realize that in God's eyes, after Christ died on the cross, it was finished. All these skirmishes that you're going through, they've been put away in His sight, and you've already won. And that's how He sees you, and that's how you should see yourself. Having started with Christ, why are you trying to continue with your own strength? If you realize that He's the one who brought you out by His power, why are you trying to live the Christian life in your own power? It is impossible. Even in the desert, through this world that you're passing in, your present, Egypt was our past, this is our present, it's hard and harsh, and the desert environment is not friendly to anybody who is in it. But if God is there, and God is the one who called you out to that place, which is where we are now, then He will provide for your every need. The last one. Unbelief is the only roadblock against God's plan for your life. He told them from the start, "The reason I'm taking you out of Egypt is to show you and to give you the thing that I promised you." As long as you continue to reject believing in fear that God has actually will give you what He promised you, you will continue to wander around in circles in your Christian life in the desert. And a journey that should take you 11 days can take you 40 years because of disobedience and disbelief in God. If you were them, what reason, what excuse could you possibly give God for not believing what He said? After everything that He's shown you, as a Christian, as a person who has seen the hand of God in your life and in the life of your parents and those around you, what excuse do you have to not believe that God is actually going to do what He said He's going to do? If you keep that attitude, then you're not going to move forward in your Christian life. You'll continue to spin around in circles until you choose to trust God enough to move forward with Him and to claim the promise that He's given you. I want to read you guys this. This is the end. How lovely is your dwelling place, Lord Almighty. My soul yearns, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may have her young. A place near your altar, Lord Almighty, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage, that is the way through the desert. As they pass through the valley of Baca, Baca means tears, they make it a place of springs. The autumn rains also cover it with pools. They go from strength to strength till each one appears before God in Zion. If you're passing through the desert but God is with you, then you're in His presence and then that's all that you need. But if you're in Egypt with all its luxuries without God, then when you do appear before God, you're not going to be able to stand before Him. The wilderness is now, is our present. And God asks us to trust Him in our present. Because His promise to each of us is real and true. And He's asking us to hold on and to do what He asks until the time that we actually see it. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we have no excuse before You. You've been so wonderful to all of us, Lord. The way You've led and guided us even to this very spot tonight, Lord. All the events that have happened in our lives to lead us to this point. You've watched over every step and You've led every single step. The good and the things that we think were bad. We just thank You so much, Lord. And we just pray that You would open our eyes to see who You really are, Lord, and to just trust You and to walk with You and to love You as You ought to be loved by each of us, Lord. We just commit these words that have been spoken into Your hands, Lord, and we just pray that You would imprint them on our hearts as we go through this wilderness with You. In Your precious name we pray.